Welcome to BSing with Sean K. I'm your host, Sean Neese. And usually on this show, I talk with people pursuing their creative and intellectual passions. But in light of current events with the protests that are going on in response to the killing of George Floyd by police and also Breonna Taylor and other African Americans who have been killed unjustly by the police. In many cases, they weren't even charged with a crime, and even if someone is charged with a crime, you still have rights. And I watched the footage of George Floyd being killed. I could only watch some of it. It was because it was before I had to turn it off. But I'm glad those officers have been charged, because there was no excuse for what they did. I'm not going to go into it, because you can look up yourself if you don't know already. But also Breonna Taylor, her death was tragic as well, because especially during the time of Corona, because she was an EMT, and EMTs are on the front line right now saving lives, and it's very sad that what happened. And yes, I don't condone violence of any kind, and it's sad when anybody gets killed. A lot of times people, when someone talks about African Americans killed by the police, they say but what about police who were killed, or what about black and black crime or other things like that? And I think that that's kind of avoiding talking about the issue, because I think with in other cases where someone is killed, the crime's prosecuted. And if a civilian kills a civilian, or if there's a black-on-black crime, or someone kills a police officer, the person's prosecuted, and they don't get away with it. They don't get, a slap on the wrist, or, it's, police officers get away with doing things like that more. And we need to, police officers have to be held accountable just as much as anybody else. And I do understand, they serve a service, but I think there are cops that go into the force to protect their community and help people, but then there's a lot that also go in there because they want to boss people around. They want to just be an authority figure so they can bully people. And I think when hiring cops, we need to think about, we need to see what kind of person they are, and what are their reasons for being a cop, and also give them training on how to only use force as a last option. And there shouldn't be things like chokeholds for nonviolent offenses, and also people racial bias training. If someone's policing an area has a large minority population, or even an area that doesn't have a lot of minorities, but there might be some that come through there, I think they should be trained on just being used to different people with different kinds of backgrounds. I think a real issue is people need to listen to each other and empathize with people who've had different experiences than their own, or or from different backgrounds or a different race of their own. And I'll even say that growing up, a lot of the movies and TVs I'd watch would portray people of color as stereotypes. And I grew up in the suburbs, so I had some friends of other races, but it wasn't on a daily basis. I was exposed to people of different backgrounds, so it was easier for me to believe certain stereotypes I'd see in the movies. And the only way I ever got out of that was when I started going out in the world more, actually doing music was one thing that helped me, because when I was in a grindcore band and before that a punk band, when I was doing that music, I would talk to people from Latin America, from the Middle East, or like other parts of the world, or even, you know, in the U.S. that were different races that played this kind of music. And that kind of opened my mind more to like meeting someone that didn't fit in, fall into that stereotype. Yeah, it's, you know, the more I interacted with different kinds of people and the more I learned to listen to other people. Like, that's one thing I've especially learned as an interviewer, is to listen to other people and empathize with other people. That's definitely opened up my mind a lot. And reading, also reading authors from different backgrounds, like James Baldwin, who is one of my favorite African and American writers, who not only wrote great fiction novels like Giovanni's Room, he also wrote like Notes of a Native, so a lot of essays about racial relations and his experience, like how the world perceived him as an African American. And also Joy Harjo, who's like a Native American poet, someone I really like a lot, and just like reading about their life and their experiences. But anyway, getting into my guest today, Aura. She's a friend of mine that I know from doing improv. She was in my improv level one class, and she's a very funny lady. I think that pretty much every class I had with her there, she made me laugh. But this episode, it gets very serious. She recently posted an Instagram post that talked about some of her experiences being an Afro-Latina woman, and I decided to have her on the show because of that, because I, like I said, I think having these conversations and learning to empathize with people different from you is important. Anyway, without further delay, here's the conversation, and I hope you enjoy. So I'm here with Auda Control Aura from my improv level one class. You were in, that was your superhero name, and you were on my team, Mr. Whiskers.
Yes. And
recently on Instagram, you posted about some of your life experiences that related to what's going on now with discrimination and people, and just like people relating to you, like assuming things like about you that weren't necessarily true because of like your background and everything. Like, I guess like and I think that relates a lot to what's going on, like people not always being to empathize with people different from them, or who come from a different background or have had different life experiences. So I'll let you just like have the floor to start going into it.
So I think after 400 years of oppression, America, we kind of forgot about the issue, the black issue. And I think the assumption about white people, for me, in my experience, because you're not experiencing the path, you don't know unless someone tells you. If you're not living the life, it's hard for you to hear. It's hard for the world to understand, to hear you. And I think the sad events of the recent past in general have brought this to the attention of everyone. In my story, I have benefit from being light skin, from being mixed. It's been easier for me to assimilate to white America. But the pain, the social injustice that I have experienced, it's been very difficult. And now I feel that it's all bubbling inside of me. I have so many feelings anger, rage, guilt, so much that it's hard to put in place. When I was five, something that really rocks my world, the woman, my definition, I am an Afro-Latina, and my definition, my security lies in two Black women, my grandmother and my mother. Both of them, my grandmother 100% Black from Africa, and my mother mixed, but darker than I. So I consider myself a Latina Black woman. And America does not see me the same. So that's painful in itself. But then added those moments of microaggressions that a lot of people don't even know what they're doing. A lot of people do know what they're doing, but a lot of people don't know. Those little sparks of microaggressions towards a person of color, towards an immigrant, is been very hard for me to deal with over the past years. And I feel the speaking out and educating my fellow men, my dear white people, is the only way. Education will be the only path. Learning of a struggle, of a pain, learning is the only way to go. And the first time I got called the N-word, I knew I was different. I grew up in a very poor town in Lima, Peru. And my grandmother is very, very, very dark. I remember being 5 or 4, and she's coming down the street to visit us, and all the kids started screaming the N-word. And that was my first introduction that I might have been 4, I might have been 3, I really don't remember even the whole day. I remember pieces. And I remember that feeling, I am different. I am less deaf, less, because that's what the world threw at me. And mind you, in my town, all the Incas, all the native people of Peru are darker skinned than me, but they have straight hair and fine features, but I was still the N-word growing up. And then I came to this country, and my identity lies on two Black Latino women. So I consider myself that. And I came to this country, and I was essentially pulled apart by both parties. I wasn't accepted by either. The white people, I wasn't white enough. The Black people, I wasn't dark enough. So I was kind of left always in limbo of identity. So I grew up with that pain. And now my son, I'm married to a white man, and my son is very fair. And he's growing up with a different identity than I am. I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. And he's paying because he's white passing. His pain is people saying extremely inappropriate things about Black people to him, not knowing where he comes from. So this race issue is hard. It's hard to move forward. And I think the only way is me and you and everyone else to talk about it and voice the pain and the hurt and the injustice of it all, the oppression of it all.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess a lot of it is conditioning, I guess, like maybe the media that people consume growing up, like maybe stereotypes in TVs and movies.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first positive, don't quote me on this, but the first positive film out about African-American men that wasn't a gang member, a robber, a crack addict, a slave, there wasn't a negative. People forget, it's not that far away. It was recently, it was Gordon Parks, it was Cindy Pontier, it was Belafonte. It's not that far away that we have had something positive to reflect us. And where I come from, women of color like me in Latin America, they don't call themselves Afro-Latinas. They don't dare to voice that. The Latin community doesn't necessarily accept that term. I think we're clearly all moving forward, so I do have lots of hope. We are moving forward, but it's definitely a battle. It's definitely painful. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. So I think the main thing is like recognizing the past, like understanding the past better to make a better future.
Yes. And also I believe that it's hard for the privilege of your skin to cross economic barriers. So white people in this country, they are in a poor, feel slighted also, but they don't realize their the slight black person, the poor black person and the poor white person. Economically, it's very difficult for both of them. But the black person has the skin on top of that to deal with. It's not just the economic oppression. It's not just the poverty. On top of it is the skin. And I think it's very difficult for white, poor Americans to understand that concept because they are also having a tough time, out of work, living in no food. So how can you have compassion when you have so much hardship? It's hard. And reaching the gap, understanding that perfect example, one guy, a black guy travels to New Orleans per se to pick up his friend and the friend is white and he's driving. So he's like, leave your car, I'll let you drive me. The white black man is driving. So they exchange cars and the black man is driving. And before he drives, he takes out his license, his registration, all his IDs, everything he needs, the black man, out of the glove compartment before he starts a car and puts it on the top of the visor. And the white man says, and they're friends. They love each other. They're good friends. Whoa, dude, what are you doing? He goes, I don't want to be reaching for anything if I get stopped by the cops. That's the privilege. It's not, I feel like a lot of poor people it's very hard to understand when you are also oppressed, your privilege. But that is the extra layer that we have to live with. The extra layer that's very hard to swallow.
Yeah, well, when I think some of it is, like you were talking about, when people are hurting, it's also hurting. It's hard to empathize, like, with somebody else or see how somebody else might be going through, like, something worse in a way. Or there's also, like scapegoating. I know, like, that a lot of people, like, certain leaders will, like, take advantage of that and, like, use that to scapegoat minority, yes. Like, turn white, poor white people against yes. poor minorities. Or,
yes. And, you know, poor people, regardless of the skin color, education is an issue. Feeding your family is an issue. So when you are so angry at the system that has failed you, it's very difficult to have compassion for someone that's telling you, take your knee off my neck. And the education that white America needs to understand that layer, that it's not just economic oppression, it's not just that we in the same, it's also our systematic oppression of our leaders of this country. And what's happening now is just a shame, just so sad. But I do have hope that we'll move forward, that we will. This is a very hard learning lesson for the country, for the world. It's a very difficult lesson to learn this way. But anger is hard to put into action. When people are angry, it's hard to pull into action. And after years of feeling this way, I find it's tough.
So what do you think needs to be done for people to better empathize with people who were different from them, or look different from them or come from a different background than them?
I honestly believe it's just knowing that white privilege is a thing. When my son was little, I said to him, if you running down the street with a friend of yours that's darker than you, don't be doing that, because the one that's going to get in trouble is your friend. Be careful. Don't be bad behavior with a kid of color that's your friend, because the one that's going to get in trouble is your friend. So it's a responsibility. The white American needs to understand of the price we pay is for our color of our skin. The price is high in understanding, knowing. There is a book out, White Fragility. I've been listening to it on tape because I'm dyslexic. It's very hard. It's for white people to know their struggle, what it to mean. It's written by a white woman. She's worked in diversity her whole life. It's very difficult for people to understand if you're not leaving that path. It's like an alcoholic. Another alcoholic gets it. That's the reason why they go to AA. Because they know that path. So education, understanding that every time we get in a car, that even in our own home, sleeping, someone can come and kill you. Understanding that the struggle is real. Essentially, I strongly believe it's just education. Most people in the planet are not racist. Most people just don't know. Most white America doesn't understand there is tons of racist people. There's people on terrible circumstances, they do terrible things. I understand that. But the I can't pronounce this word. The white brutality that has happened to the African from everywhere. African Latinos, African Americans, Africans from Africa. It's been difficult. And also I believe that this is Africans from everywhere have not stand together and said, take the knee off my neck like it's happening now. All over Europe, all over everywhere, people protesting. And I think it's very important. I don't agree with the looting and the damaging companies, but I understand the anger. I understand the anger of it all, the rage of it all.
Yeah. Well, I do also have to point out that, like, a lot of the people coming in to loot, like, aren't a part of the actual protests going on. And, like, I've actually seen the videos that a lot of the looters are white.
Yes.
And, like, there was that one video that there was an African-American go like yelling at that lived in that neighborhood, and she was yelling at the looters to stop, and all the looters she was yelling at were white.
Yes. So, yeah. And there was an incident in the city with a red car full of white teenagers. The car was loaded with bricks and they were passing it to the protesters, the black people, to the kids. And a mom runs behind the car to say, are you kidding me? What are you doing? And that's the privilege right there. The fact that they can drive in a car full of bricks, pass it to somebody else, and have the law of the unattended. Hold on, I wrote it down so I don't forget. Weaponize the color of the skin. Because they know if a black boy is caught with a brick, it's going to be a problem. So it's the same thing that happened in Central Park. That woman was weaponizing her white privilege. She knew exactly by saying, this black man is threatening me, that she knew the outcome. Because she wouldn't have said those words otherwise. It's just, the whole thing is very disturbing. And a lot of the looters are people that are taking advantage of a good, just time in our history. And they're just taking advantage of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, it shows his hypocrisy when like Trump he's saying he wants to send in the National Guard for this protest, and like he wants to send in the military for this protest, but when it was going on in Charlottesville and someone was murdered, he didn't want to send in the National Guard or the military then.
I feel like we have no leader at the moment. A leader is a buffoon, to say the least. And he's enticed all this. But he has not taken into account what this would do. He hasn't taken into account that people will rise up and say enough. And I think that's going to hurt him. And I urge, go vote, go vote, go vote, go vote. That's the only way to change the laws, to pass police reform, to open people's eyes to the struggle of a person of color, regardless of where they're from, is going to be the answer. you know, I get confused all the time for the nanny, the housekeeper, the worker. I must be that because of the color of my skin and my neighborhood I live in New York and in Connecticut. I must be that. And I have lived with it my whole life. I know that little feeling inside me that hurts, that I have to put myself together better, try harder. And I think every Black person lives with that little fear in the heart, that anger, and I don't think it's little, my apologies for saying little, with that anger and that fear. And I have family members that don't understand the subject, and with love and kindness, I'm trying to teach my white allies. And I have to thank all the white allies, because this movement will not move forward without them. We need everyone. We need all hands on deck for this to work. This is difficult.
Okay. So have you found that people get defensive when you bring up white privilege, like they think you're attacking them for being white? Yeah. Like has that been the common response?
Yes. Not all people. But a lot of people feel that. How can you not feel that? You know, when your ancestors in 400 years ago had owned slaves and you're a white person in America, the guilt, the fear that you, your family, your ancestors have done this, is a tough conversation. But you get through the other side. And that's what white people need to go through, the uncomfortable moments to come at the other end a good citizen for your whole community, not just for white privilege, for your whole entire community to be a better citizen. You need to go those uncomfortable moments to get through the other side. And that's difficult for anyone to do, to go to those uncomfortable moments that make you feel, oh, wow.
Like having uncomfortable conversations, you mean? Or like uncomfortable
conversations, uncomfortable realizing of your part on this, in this world, realizing your privilege, understanding your privilege in this world, and then moving from that forward. But you have to go through that to move forward. Understand your privilege. Understand what is, how does it work. It's, but we need to have these conversations. My own family in Peru, some of them did never accept me. I remember I have a half sister, and my grandmother, she was 100% Inca, was putting us on a bath, and the other little girls say about me and my brother, ew, they dirty. I don't want to be in a bath with them. So that's the kind of thing that we need to talk about and move forward.
So like when you came to the US, like was there anything you noticed that was, what was different between like racism in Peru and in the US? Like what was there anything unique about the US?
In Peru, I was clear that was a black person. It was clear to me that I was a black person. I came to this country and I wasn't black enough. But I wasn't white either. So I really didn't quite belong. It took a long time for me to fit somewhere. So the experience was very surreal in the sense that I went from beating one race at 11 years old and then beating another race, that same 11-year-old, not beating that. And now I have educated myself on race. I have worked with diversity for a very long time. And now I know where I stand. I'm an Afro-Latina woman that I believe I'm a black woman because I was raised by black women. So I know my place, but it wasn't automatically that I knew my place. And that's a different struggle for me. But you always have that little, recently a friend of me, I was saying, well, I'm your only black friend. Well, you're not black. I'm like, and it took a while for me to say, wait, I don't think you get it. I am black. I'm just not born in the United States. So that was the difference, trying to move through that gap and come into their understanding of, I'm just Latin.
Like understanding of like how, I guess people would perceive you in the US or like how?
People perceive me in the United States. I don't know exactly how they perceive me. White people know I'm not white. Black people at times didn't understand that I am of African descent. So I think that was always a struggle for me, not fitting. I think a lot of more Latinos are coming out doing this movement in the past few weeks of saying, yes, I am Afro-Latina. I am Afro-Latina. And I think that's great because there's Africans in all parts of the world. We were moved everywhere. My grandmother was born a ship from Africa to Peru when she was a baby.
I guess like any other things you think like can be done to improve things over time? And
I think the laws have to pass to the police is a force and an authority. It's a very strong authority in this country, in every country. The police is, they're supposed to extend the law. They're supposed to take care of us. And that has not happened for the African community. So we need to change the laws to include us. Justice for all. It's not just justice for some. It's justice for all. All men are created equal. In America, it says that, but it's not happened. All men have not been created equal. The fear of a black man is brutal. So the laws have to change. And I think that change will move forward. Awareness has to happen of white privilege. And again, white privilege is not a social economic. White privilege is, and I think a lot of people confuse white privilege with an economic thing, and it's not. is just the color of your skin. Not just, it's the color of your skin and what that does to you, how people view you. I mean,
yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. You're saying that, like the white privilege is like not being judged by your race first.
Yeah.
Like, and people seeing you first rather than like having, because from what you're saying, it's like you feel like you have to, like people already have a perception of you when yes. they meet you, and you kind of have to prove like that you're not that stereotype.
Yes.
Or even yeah. in your post, you talked about when you went into a store and
yes.
people assumed you were going to steal.
Yeah. I went to a high-end store on Madison Avenue. I was buying a suit, a very fancy suit. And the woman put her arms out to touch the entrance, both sides of the entrance, so I don't come through. And she said to me, we have nothing for you here. And I already looked at the suit in the Vogue magazine. I knew exactly what I wanted. I went looking for it. I knew they had it in the shop. And she's, we have nothing for you here. Once at a shoe store, high-end shoe store on Madison, on Fifth Avenue, I came out crying. And back then it was my fiance, now my husband. The guy treated me so poorly that I came out of the store crying, and my husband ran in after me. And I'm in the corner, refused to go back in to give the guy a piece of his mind because of the color of my skin. I was telling a girlfriend of mine, she reminded me of this story the other day. I went to buy I've been wearing Coco Chanel for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, I can't remember. It's the only perfume I wear. And I bought it at a high-end shop on Madison and 76th Street. And it was rancid. When I opened the box, and I know because I've been wearing it for over 20 years, and it smelled bad. It was clearly not good. And my girlfriend called me, and we're talking, chit-chatting. And I said, oh, my God, I just bought a bad perfume and I'm gonna throw it out. She goes, why don't you return it? You have the box. And I go, yes. Why don't you return it? And I said to her, they will never believe me. Then they would never. So she came to my house, took the perfume from me, went to the store and got me a new one. There's no way I could have done that. Every time I walk to the store, it is shop. I have to put my hands in my pocket. I have to make sure I act a certain way. I have to make sure they see me. I have to make sure I say hi to them. Because the assumption is that I must be stealing. In the corner of my CVS, all my hair products were never in stock. I use a particular hair products because my hair is curly. I had to complain to the manager. Why is this? Because the assumption is that I'm not going to purchase it. In other CVSs, in other neighborhoods, white neighborhoods had the product, but not in mine. Because there's no people of color in my neighborhood that would purchase this stuff. So that's those kind of little microaggressions that have my experience, they have worn on me. And these past few weeks, it's been just emotionally brutal. And the only way I see is educating people, talking about it, letting people know of my experience. And a lot of my friends, we're like, whoa, I didn't know this happened to you. I'm so sorry. Because we don't talk about it. you know, we talk about race, we talk about this, but it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I am. I'm sorry you went through that too with everything. But
thank you.
Yeah, I think that's an important what you just talked about is important because when they show these videos, you know, people getting killed in confrontations with the police or a lot of times, like, people will say things like, oh, they were breaking the law, so they shouldn't have broken.
Yes.
But you know, it could have been you just going into the store and them assuming you
yes.
were stealing. You might not have even been committing a crime. And even
yes.
if someone is committing a crime, they still have rights, you know, like even
yes.
if someone did, yeah.
Yes, and that's exactly it. If a black man steals an apple and a white man steals an apple, they're going to be treated completely different. And that's the problem. Justice for all, equally under the law. And that's what we're missing. Because the black man will catch a beating and do a stint in prison. The white man might be like, he's hungry. Well, we'll arrest him. He post bail is over. Maybe. But that's the problem. The equality of it all has not been here for the past 400 years. The equality, it hasn't been here.
So is there like any final thoughts you'd like to say? Or anything before we wrap up?
Yes. Black Lives Matter. And that doesn't mean other lives don't matter. It means the equality is not for us now, but it will be. It will be. And thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on and sharing your experience. Anyway, and it's good to, like, catch up. Well, like, get back in touch after.
Yes.
After, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's a very emotional, emotional time, like, for a lot of reasons. And I know, like, you also beat, if I might be mistaken about this, you posted you had Corona,
yes.
and you recovered, so.
Yes, my husband and I had Corona. It was very difficult. He was very, very, very sick. I had a milder case, and my condolence to all the people that have lost people. Let's stay safe. And we will move through all this, but and I think the racial tension between the Corona and the anger in people's heart of this oppression has made things stand out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they need it to be. And they need it to be.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, even though, like, it's a social isolation, like, people are kind of, I mean, I know there's a lot of like bad, like, going on too. And like you said, a lot of anger, but like also people are uniting more and like rallying
yeah.
together. And it's just, it's interesting that a lot of that's happening during a time of social distancing and isolation. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you in class.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
I'm gonna go back.
Yeah, oh yeah. I got to go to, Improv 3 is the next one. I'm
yeah, yes, me too. Improv 3.
Yeah. Whenever this opens up
yeah.
again. Yeah. I want to take like more, like traditional acting classes again. Cause you know, I've still been auditioning to like voice acting work doing this, but not as much like film work, but voice acting you can just do from home. So,
right. How is Mr. Whiskers?
Oh, Mr. Whiskers is pretty good. Yeah. You were on my team with the Mr. Whiskers.
Yes.
And all, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that was the exercise. He goes, Mr. Whiskers.
Yeah, super funny. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I'm glad you're
so you're in Jersey, you're quarantining in Jersey, right?
Yes, South Orange, New Jersey. Yeah, I was in New Jersey during when I was taking the class too. I'm just very close to the city. So I just like take a train and
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, stay safe. I miss you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I miss you too. Yeah. Well, good to talk to you. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Yep. You have been listening to BSing with Sean K on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay, so that was our talk, and I hope it was insightful to some of you. Like I said at the beginning, it's good to hear about experiences that people have like this in order to better empathize with them. And even outside of the show, I've been talking to some of my friends who are people of color about their experiences, and regardless of their political beliefs or what they think about what's going on right now, most of them have told me that same thing about how when they meet people, it's often assumed they have ill intent and they have to, or it's assumed they fall into a certain stereotype and they have to work to prove that they're not that stereotype or that they're a good person. And also, some of my friends that are African American men, and some of them, the ones I'm thinking of, aren't even like super political or involved in what's like the rallies or anything like that, but they have said that a lot of times they have to kind of check themselves to make sure that when they get off the train, they don't look like they're following someone, or they don't, that they don't do anything that makes someone uncomfortable. You know, it's they feel like there's always this extra effort they have to do to, so they're not seen as a threat, or they're not, you know, they're not stereotyped or anything like that. And that's not something I've had to deal with as a white person. And I do think that, I guess, you know, and I know it's hard for a lot of people, like we were saying in the conversation, like, it took me a while to, like, understand until I really, like, started hearing out what it was, like, what people meant when they said white privilege. Because it doesn't mean that, like, a white person doesn't, like, suffer or go through anything bad, but I think that specific, that's that they don't have to deal with that specific struggle, that specific experience based on the race. Before we wrap up, I do have some important announcements to make regarding Radio Free Brooklyn. If you, and I do mean you, would like to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn when you're not in front of your computer, please, please consider downloading the free mobile app for iPhone and Android. It's available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for the Android. Now, this is about our Radio Free Brooklyn newsletter. Please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming Radio Free Brooklyn events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter. I don't know why I can't ever do these reads seriously. It's like, it was a very serious episode, like a serious topic. It's like every time I read these reads, I always go into like a goofy mode, but whatever. All right, now about Corona, COVID-19 fundraising. So friends, COVID-19 is disrupting everyone's lives right now. And Radio Free Brooklyn is no exception. We want you to know that we have made every effort to ensure the health and well-being of our hosts, staffs, and community at large. We've closed both our studios and canceled live events. But our hosts are still doing their best to continue bringing new original programming by broadcasting live and pre-recording from their home studios, or by selecting the best rebroadcasts of their past shows. With most of our revenue streams evaporated, we need your help. We realize you may be hurting too, but if you can afford a small donation, it will go a long way in helping us stay on the air. There are three ways you can help. First, you can give a one-time or monthly donation by going to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. There, you'll find some great t-shirts, mugs, and other swag that we like to send to you to say thanks. You can also use your phone to text RFB Give 5, that's the number 5, RFB GIVE number 5, RFB GIVE 5, to 44321. It only takes a moment, and you'll be able to use your digital wallet for your donation. Finally, if you shop on Amazon, you can go to amazon.com/smile and register Radio Free Brooklyn as a nonprofit you wish to support. When you do, a percentage of your sales will go to RFB and it will cost you nothing. No donation is too big or too small. Whatever you can afford will make a huge difference. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts and wish all our listeners health and happiness as we weather this storm together. And there's one more new read. Undercover, a virtual benefit for the music industry. The Undercover Concert Series returns Saturday, June 20th, 2020, with performances by Ask Jesus, The Big Easy, Eclectic Method, and Eclectic Method. I can never pronounce that word, eclectic. Developed by the Visceral Glitch and AT exclamation part M. Undercover is a virtual benefit concert series that pairs two musicians to perform original versions of each other's songs. Undercover provides an opportunity for fans to enjoy the live music experience from the safety and comfort of their homes while raising funds for artists whose incomes have been adversely affected by the COVID-19 crisis. Via $1 early ticket purchases and virtual tip jar, a percentage of donations will be distributed to the Musicians Foundation as well as participating musicians. Tickets are available at dice.com. To learn more about our concert series, visit Undercover NYC. Thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Your support keeps this station going. And thank you for listening to BSing with Sean K. My show airs every Monday, 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. And I am also on Spotify, iTunes, and you can find episodes on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. Also, I'm going to post a link to some organizations you can donate to that are helping in different ways with a lot of the things. Yeah, so I'll post a link to that in the description. Anyway, that about does it for this week's episode. I'll catch you on the next one. BSing with who? BSing with what? BSing with Sean K. BSing with who? BSing with what? BSing with